Hello and welcome everyone to probably the specialist of all special episodes of MTG Potpourri. I have no idea what episode number it is, but it's July 10th. I noticed that a lot of podcasts say the date, so I think I'm going to start doing that, if you're cool with that, Adam.
I think that's awesome.
I'm not saying the year, I'm just saying the day. So it could be July 10th of, 2018, 2014, 2010. We could be predicting the future. I'm going to keep you guessing. We're a thinking man's podcast, Adam.
Well, we are either episode 13, if you're not a superstitious curmudgeon, or episode 14, if you are. So it's episode 13.
I have size 13 shoes, size 13 hat. I'm all up in that.
It actually bothers me when I get into a big hotel or elevator or something, and there's like no 13th floor. Like it just, it's just
it's
like
a little strange. It's like that's a lot.
I don't know if
it's
just like. Yeah, it's like, it's at a point of, is it cutesy? It's like, well, we're just going to pretend there's no 13th floor and everybody would be like, oh, it's because it's unlucky. Like, I just don't get that concept.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. This is what you get for doing Google image searches while you're trying to podcast. You get so shocked.
I don't want to know what your Google image searching, Tom.
I don't want to know. Robot restaurant. Is the world's apparently this was on this week's Giant Bomb where they talk this is apparently an insane restaurant in Japan called the Robot Restaurant, which it's not the food that's good, but they said in some ways it's like a live action show where they have they're clad but scantily clad women, like robots and giant spiders. Is the weirdest thing I have ever seen. That's what I was looking at pictures of. I will include a link. Nothing is, I would say it's. Well, no, let's try this. I'd say safe for work. I don't think there's anything actually exposed as I look at this. But it's like, it's like a R-rated version of Transformers. There's lots of neon. Yeah, it's nuts. It's worth looking at. But Adam, usually you're the one that reminds me that this is actually a podcast about the game, the collectible card game Magic the Gathering.
Apparently.
Yeah, and we have a huge set that just came out, and we have all the cards in Magic 2015.
And well, it's not out just yet.
Well, I should say we know the whole set. It will be playable this upcoming weekend, right? Or the pre-releases?
Well, the pre-release is tomorrow. Start tomorrow.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, we are recording Thursday night. So I guess
so
when you're listening to this,
it will just happen. So this Friday. So in future reality, this Friday is when you'll be able to go to your local game store and check out all the actual cards and buy whatever you want and open your packs. But... yeah, we know the whole set. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it seems overall, especially from, again, hopefully Conley will hop on. He is doing some major pro tour preparation junk, so we understand that he is busy. It probably just means he's passed out with like a bunch of ice cream, because we know he does that. He went and hit Walmart, came home, and passed out. Or he's pro tour testing. It's one of the two. And overall, it seems like the pros, a lot of more competitive players seem really excited about this set. And I was kind of curious to hear, Adam, you might be able to share a little bit too, is I'm coming from a very casual side, and it has a lot of cool things for me, but it seems like the competitive players also are really excited. It's not often that people from both sides get excited about the same set.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they really, the R&D folks, design and development, obviously both have a big hand in making sets happen. Creative keeps seeming to have a bigger and bigger role in getting kind of the theme of a set. So, typically like in a block, like the upcoming Khans of Tarkir block, it's all about this new playing Khans of Tarkir, the homeland of Sarkhan Vol, dragon worshipping, marauding tribes of warriors is kind of what theme looks like. But what's kind of really made this core set different is once they came out with M10, Magic 2010 was the first new core set where they put new cards in. And it looks like this time is the first time in the core set they've changed it where they kind of just like open it up to a whole bunch of different planes. So instead of being kind of like one cohesive theme, it's just kind of like a whole bunch of stuff spliced together. So, all the different souls representing all these different older planes in Magic. They brought slivers back again, which, makes Yay. Two returning mechanics.
And they look like they're real slivers.
Yeah. It's just, they kind of backpedaled from the humanoid sliver look kind of somewhat. So it's just really, it's really crossing a lot of streams, and it's not blowing up.
Yeah, usually that just kills everybody. So they
yeah, like,
but it worked at the end of Ghostbusters. So here they cross the streams and they won.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what makes the set so special, is that there's it seems like there really is something for everyone, and that something they put in for everyone is above and beyond what was expected. It's just really, you know, like a higher level of awesome. You know, like, yes, oh, we get legendary creatures. Oh, we get a new Sliver Lord. Oh, we get, you know, Court of Calling and Hushwing Griffin and a bunch of competitive relevant cards and reprints. We get Titans back, but they're not like busted Titans. They're kind of seemingly slightly fair, but they're still really cool and sexy. It just seems to have everything in it.
Squids are a topic I could enter the conversation on.
I was incredibly excited. And what is more scary than a squid? It's a squid horror. I mean,
it sucks. The squids are scary. I apologize. I had to literally reboot. I had to go restart my computer to an older date because some virus thing took hold and my entire computer shut down and locked down. So I had to like manually reboot the entire thing. It took a while. My apologies.
No, it's understandable. Actually, kind of like just before you jumped on, and I were talking about the reason that this is the most special ever episode of MTG Potpourri is because of Magic 2015. But I'm not a competitive player, but what I've been seeing on Twitter talk, and I was hoping you could chime in on this, is it seems like even the professional competitive players are really excited about this set.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite core set I've ever seen of all time. It's not very core set-y, in my opinion. Like, it's very... a lot of complicated mechanics, not like keywords or anything like that, but it's just like individual card designs and interactions. A lot of strange templating, and you know, there's like a storyline and stuff now, like all kinds of weird stuff. So it doesn't feel like a core set to me, but I at the same time, I like the direction of it because it means more playable cards for Constructed. And one of my gripes about Constructed, specifically Standard, is that when they reduce the set size down, Standard can tend to get a little stale at times because there's not as deep of a card pool to go to come up with unique ideas or to come up with counter answers to things. But if the core sets continue to have impactful build around cards and important sideboard cards and important utility cards like M15 does, then all of a sudden, like, having smaller set sizes is no longer a concern because you get those extra 200 amazing cards to work with. Normally, like, you expect one or two good cycles out of M15 type sets, M14, etc., and then, like, of course, your Rampant Growth and your Lightning Bolt, etc. But this set's like totally different. There's just it's so deep in terms of brewable cards, if that's a word. And I don't know. I'm extremely excited about it. Obviously, I can't talk about anything specific since the Pro Tour is coming up and it's Standard, so I can't give away any super secret ideas yet. But
can you give like a couple of the cards that sort of represent this being this very deep set that you said might be cards that you could brew decks around? I don't say what deck it is, but can you give a couple of examples?
I mean, there's a ton of like linear type stuff that is still fairly open, like the Obelisk of Urd. Pushing tribal decks is something that, you know, Standard currently has no tribal deck, a single one that you could classify as a tribal deck. So if even one tribal deck enters a format as a result of that card, that's pretty sweet. And, you know, there might be multiples, like you guys are talking about Slivers. Maybe that's the tribal set that wants to run Obelisk, and maybe the new Sliver Overlord guy that gives Indestructible because he's sweet. You have like unique kind of build arounds like Yisand, the Wanderer's Bard, I think it is. That's like, you know, has this like birthing pot aspect to it, but, you know, it's slower, but it has this unique mana curve element to it that's really fun to build around. Cards like Return to the Ranks that you are caring about, you know, specific mana costs in your graveyard. So all of a sudden that's a new angle to build around. All the souls, I think, are very interesting. They're not baseline as powerful as a Titan, but you can get them to be as powerful as a Titan in a deck that kind of showcases them. So I think they're all very interesting to look at. All the Planeswalkers are deep and interesting. It's just like, I don't know, there's really no shortage of interesting cards from M15. There's as many interesting cards in M15 as almost the entire block Theros, and I like Theros as a block for the most part.
Okay.
Well, before we jump too far, since all three of us are here quickly, and I know, Conley, you're probably going to have to jump out for another call, but let's just go around and introduce ourselves so everybody knows who's talking about what. I'm Adam Staborski.
Well, I think if somebody's finally still listening to this podcast, they would hopefully know who we are at this point.
I was just saying, you guys talked for 15 minutes without introducing yourselves.
We did, yeah. I just jumped right into it. Because, I mean, we all expect a certain level of professionalism and standardization to this podcast where, you know, it's magic talk 110% of the time. And if we don't talk about magic, I get so angry that I just can't talk anymore.
That's fair.
Or I talk about the robot restaurant in Japan. It's one of those two things that we talked about before you jumped on.
Everyone calls him the notorious TOM. So,
So I am Tom Gustafson, not Wilt Chamberlain. Where if you looked at any sort of video store in the 1990s, you would probably wonder why Wilt Chamberlain rented so many movies. That was actually me.
And then I am Conley Woods, resident smart aleck.
And pound hashtag boner jam.
What's the pound for? What does that
mean? I meant hashtag, but it's the pound symbol.
You don't need to say pound and hashtag simultaneously.
Yeah, you do. I'm very literal. I'm like, it's pound sign and following that is the hashtag, which is boner jams with a Z.
All right, fair enough. I'll let you pass.
I'm just real old, so yeah, yeah, give me some slack on that one.
All right, so what's the topic? What are we going on? M15 suite? Anything else?
Yeah, well, I think Adam had talked about maybe you already mentioned kind of a couple cards. I think Adam is just dying at the bit. This is his way of getting the talking stick back to him so he can mention the cards that he's really excited about on M15.
Adam is known to be a light cog, so I understand.
Yeah, he better not have one goddamn squid card because they're all mine.
According to the history of total talking time Uber Conference kindly gives us after every call, I am distinctly always on the bottom.
Yeah, except you're like Tom and I
did together.
You're like the Brazil in the World Cup of this podcast.
Wow. It should be noted that Adam also reads upside down.
It's not really dyslexic. It's just weird. He's just on his head. He just needs all that blood in his brain to make it work right.
So there's a ton of stuff I'm excited about in Magic 2015. The article that just went up today in Command Tower actually lists out 45 different cards that I found that I'm excited about.
I'm going to need a soda and a bathroom.
We're not going to go over the 45. I'm just saying there's an actual chart of 45 cards in my Command Tower column. So you can go look it up. But just to be really, really brief, probably the two cards that I am most excited about. The first is actually really mundane. It's Perilous Vault. One of the things that really annoy me is in Commander, there's so many ways to wipe the battlefield. You can just clear everything away, and that's fine. But a lot of them, especially the white base decks, can land a planeswalker or two, and then basically just kind of protect them more or less by keeping enough creatures off the battlefield that you can't just attack them to death. That's how planeswalkers are supposed to die. It's just, okay, well, I summon this planeswalker, but you've got three dudes and you just attack them to death. When you can't do that, planeswalkers get kind of really stupid. So cards like Perilous Vault, which is basically kind of a riff on Oblivion Stone. I compare it to Nevenrul's Disc because it basically costs the same amount of mana to put into play. But it doesn't come into play in the tap. It basically just destroys all non-land permanents. So it wipes away. It's basically exile. Updated Nevenrul's Disc. Exile. Even better. Just get them the F out of there. Go away. And that's what I love about it, is just get rid of them. I might hate playing a little too much there, but I just really like that card for Commander. I think it's about time we got an updated Oblivion Stone. It's going to be legal in Standard. I don't think it may not necessarily be relevant. We'll see. I hope to see it to the Pro Tour. That'd be kind of cool. But it's definitely one of those cards that if you pick one up for Commander and you throw it in your deck, it'll probably not go to waste. And then on the cube side, it's not that interesting. But they basically printed a one mana disperse, Void Snare, just return target non-land permanent.
It's sorcery for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, it's a sorcery, but for my cube, I actually like that. So you have a choice between like a more expensive, faster bounce spell or a sorcery speed where you use it to kind of be efficient, bounce a guy and hold back something big and get your own guy down, or bounce a guy and then leave up counterspell magic. That kind of stuff is really interesting. Mana efficiency is super important in my cube. It's just basically limited taken to a really high degree. So every mana spent and the more efficient your deck is, generally the better it performs. It's kind of more mundane and boring, but I really liked it.
Worth noting, by the way, if the souls do become any sort of popular, that one mana bounce spell might be standard playable in the same way that Vapor Snag was playable. Obviously, this has a lot different qualities than Vapor Snag. It could bounce Planeswalkers and things of that nature, but it's not faster, you know, causing them to lose a life. But at the same time, it has a lot of the same qualities in Souls because they don't have an inherent ability while being cast. If you can catch them kind of with their pants down after they spent the 6 mana and make them pick it up for 1 mana, they not only have to spend the time recasting it, but you didn't put in their guard so that they can get a free ability out of it later. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. You're trading 6 mana for 1 mana and a huge tempo swing.
Yeah, it's always hard for me to wrap my hand around these new base sets because there are so many cards. And now that I'm kind of curious how many players are playing right now don't remember the days that when the core set was literally just all reprints. And it has to be a fairly big chunk of the population at this point.
I actively hated core sets back then. Like we would draft like maybe, I don't know, once or twice a week of a normal block. And when a core set would come out, it would be like the pre-release at best, maybe the release. And then that was it. Like we did not draft that on a weekly basis. We would still draft the block that existed. People really don't have that experience these days. When a core set comes out, you draft the core set until the next block comes out. We would literally just ignore the core set as a limited format, and we would still draft the last block until the next block came out. So you would just have, like, you know, 8 months of drafting full set block, and it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I kind of wonder how that decision came around. I feel like there's like this new intern like Gavin who came in. There's all the big wigs talking about the next new core set and all the awesome reprints. And he timidly raises his hand and be like, but the core set just blows ass. We need to put new cards in this thing.
I have a little bit of insight into this just because I work with some people that worked in WotC R&D during kind of all these changes, during the New World Order, as they refer to it. But basically, it was all kind of all the rules changes, all the policy changes, everything. It was all one sweeping motion to be like, what bullcrap do we have in place right now that is unnecessary and unfun? And let's get rid of it. So that's why you saw things like damage on the stack leaving, and you know, the idea that you could open a foil mythic at the same time, and the fact that, you know, lands were doing new things. Like, they released all these like sweeping changes across Magic, and a lot of things people didn't notice. Fat pack changes, a push to make Planeswalkers a central focus of the game as a marketable thing. Like, now you have Hasbro making toys for WotC, which, like, it seems like the most obvious thing in the world. Hasbro owns WotC and it has been making Magic for 20 years, effectively. And just now they're starting to release, you know, hey, we can make Magic toys. This is a great idea. Like, think about that. Like, 10 years ago, that was not a thing. Like, Magic was its own small, very rules-heavy thing. It was like, okay, you have to do the pre-release happens now, then you wait 2 weeks, and then the release happens, and then this. And in actuality, all those things were just yellow tape keeping players from having fun, and they were like, okay, let's remove all this crap and let's let people play Magic and let's make the game good. Let's stop forcing ourselves to make bad reprints set after set. Let's stop forcing ourselves to use white borders on cards. Let's, you know, let's do all these things, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, Magic's way more fun and way more marketable because it's not like, let's get my secret society playgroup together and follow our rule book to play Magic the Gathering. Instead, it's like, nope, it's an accessible game made for everybody. And that just, I don't know, it's been an awesome shift in momentum.
Just a quick clarification. Hasbro is actually still really not making Magic toys. I think you mean the Funko, the Planeswalker dolls,
yeah.
Conley? That's a license that Wizards let Funko have, because Funko has basically licensed a whole bunch of like comic and pop culture and nerd type stuff. Like, they've done stuff for Blizzard, they've done stuff for comic books.
I was referring to the Foam Axe that they just previewed.
Yes,
it's made by Hasbro.
The Nerf Garrick. Ooh, so Conley was told.
Yeah, it's a Nerf axe made by Hasbro that is a Garrick axe. That's what I was referring to. It just got announced like yesterday or today or something like that.
That's a great. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, no. I'm looking at the picture of it. It just seems sad, but apparently I'm not the target audience for a Nerf axe.
For a 14-year-old kid, like,
it doesn't show me how big it is. This thing could be like 18 feet long. That would be kind of cool to have like a huge like 18-foot foam pole axe. That I would get into. And if it's anything like the intro to the Duels of the Planeswalkers 2015, I just come up and I kill people from behind. If I understand it correctly. And I hang their faces on my belt.
All right, Adam has something important to say. Go.
Okay, so let's talk about that axe. So if you haven't heard yet, or you missed out last week, This was the announcement of the new San Diego Comic-Con exclusives. So last year, Wizards kind of made an exclusive, kind of like a darkened or like a reverse foil where it's like all black with like just like a little bit of color highlighting for all the planeswalkers.
Like an etch-a-sketch drawing.
They look sick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks really cool. Like it's super distinctive. Like you see it, you get it. Like, you know, it looks really good.
Are these tournament legal? I hope they're tournament legal. They look so sweet.
Yeah.
That was my question. Is looking at the pictures, at least of the ones that will be at this San Diego Comic Con, so the 2014 ones, you know, they're kind of in these odd little like colored plastic. I don't know what you call them, bubbles. And I wasn't sure if these were like card.
That's the box display.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. It comes in like a little special box display, and you can open it up and see them. This one looks like a bifold. Last year it was a trifold because it had five cards, so there was like three in the middle and one on each end. It kind of folded together, if I'm remembering correctly. I only saw like one on display, you know, at Gen Con or something afterwards. Last year they did it. It was five cards. It was all the Planeswalkers and M14. This year, same thing, six Planeswalkers and M15. All of the Planeswalkers got the same treatment. It's the same art, but just done in this, high graphic style, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it.
Kind of looks like the Etch-A-Sketch. Yeah, that's the best way to.
And there's a
Nerf Axe. Sorry, go ahead and discuss the Nerf Axe.
So this was announced on USA Today, which should set some alarm bells going off. Like USA Today doesn't cover Magic. Why did they get, you know, an exclusive push for that? But so San Diego Comic-Con, this is something you can only get there. it was really, really hard to find last year. They just confirmed this year that the price has doubled. So basically it's not going to be as, you know, basically cheap as it was last year. I think MSRP was like $60 or something ridiculous. So it's going to be over $100, I believe.
It's 110, I think.
Yep. And then they are producing more of them, so they won't be quite as rare, I guess, as last year's for what it's worth. But basically, the big to do about this is it's, you know, a lot of people really don't like this type of exclusive Magic card printing, you know, that it's only available at San Diego Comic Con, and it doesn't seem like it's a big Magic event, and why are they doing this? And that's kind of the big to do about the whole situation. I don't know if you caught any of that today, Conley.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like there's a combination of Duels of the Planeswalkers becoming its kind of own thing almost. It's like, you know, taking off and being a really marketable and profitable thing. And also there's the movie coming up. So I think this is like, you know, basically some very grassroots kind of, hey, Magic's still around. We're still doing cool things. We're doing better than ever. Just to get some of the people that might have, you know, people that go to these conventions are not there just for Magic. They're there for gaming of any types, anime of any types, cosplay of various types, stuff like that. So, like, if you get some people that, you know, just to recognize that Magic, people walking around with big axes in their cosplay outfits or whatever, just like, hey, that's Magic. Magic's going on here. Like, I think it sets a seed that's really important for the future as Magic is starting to explode into significantly a wider market. I don't know if they're going to necessarily announce anything particularly insane or anything here. Maybe they'll release some, like, you know, stuff from the next block, like some preview cards or something like that. But I don't think they're going to like announce like some crazy product or anything that's going to be over the top, which is what the speculation is, of course.
Well, I don't know, but on Rosewater's Twitter today, he mentioned something. Like if you are, it said, I believe the exact quote was, if you are all interested in the future of Magic, make sure to not miss our SDCC panel. So I guess I'm not sure what they would be announcing that would be that big for the future.
I think they're going to talk about the direction of Magic, of course, and I think they're going to announce some important things, but I don't think it'll necessarily be a product. Maybe they're going to talk about the movie. Maybe they're going to talk about directions for blocks. Maybe they're going to talk about release schedule, pro tour stuff. I don't know, stuff like that. But I don't know if it's going to be like, you know, Magic is now only digital or something crazy like maybe.
You know, those promo cards, all the cards are going to look like Etch-A-Sketches now.
Well, just kind of looking back at some of the panels they run, typically, you know, assuming this is an average panel, and by that I mean it runs with a similar theme and focus that previous panels have run, because they do panels like PAX East, PAX Prime, San Diego Comic Con. Like last year is basically when we first really found out what was going on in Theros. That's when they talked about kind of it was based on Greek mythology and it was an enchantment theme set, and or block, and there's new. They showed the new card frame, the Hero's Path plus basically the empty enchantment frame.
Yeah,
that type of thing. Actually, I don't see the. I'm looking at a recap. I don't see the frame. I just see. They also talked about a Commander 2013. You know, the fall Commander set that's now coming out every year. The pre-constructed decks that have new cards in them. So, assuming it's just like that, it should be just a big preview of what's going on this fall and kind of crossing the different products. They hit three last year: Theros, Commander 2013, and the dual deck Heroes versus Monsters. So, I'm very curious to see what they cover this time.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Go ahead. I've never been to one of these to know what they're like. Have you guys been to one of these panels? I mean, like, are there 10 people watching, 1,000 people? Like, how many people are watching?
I would imagine a couple hundred, like a couple hundred to 1,000. I wouldn't imagine it's like gigantic because they do stream and stuff too. So,
yeah, I was at the PAX Prime panel in 2012 and the room was packed. I mean, you had to queue, you know, like more than an hour in advance to ensure that you had a seat. It was one of the few times I did it because, you know, hey, it might have been the only time I'm going to PAX, so I want to make sure I hit at least one panel. But the room was filled. It was about 300 people. That was the panel after Return to Ravnica was announced in the spring. So this was kind of like we're finally getting Return to Ravnica details. They showed off all the dual lands and the guilds we were going to see. And it was streamed live, of course. And they always record these things. And even if it's not streamed, because obviously situation always varies, like what the facilities are, where they can do it. The panel usually gets recorded and posted to Daily MTG in about a week. So if you miss it, it'll be up later.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of these things are being streamed on Twitch or streamed live on YouTube. You know, is that something they've announced yet?
I don't know.
That'd be something that Conley, for everybody, he had to jump off to do some pro tour high level, you know, cognitive testing type stuff. So Ed and I are going to be rounding out this show, but it's like as dad gamers, yeah, you know, my chance of actually going to one of these conventions for the next like 3 to 5 years is kind of zilch. So it'd be awesome if there'd be a way for me to watch even part of it, you know, streamed live or to easily watch it even later that day, you know, downloaded or on YouTube somewhere. So I think it'd be a lot of fun to see something like that and hopefully watch it before I hear all the news, like on Twitter or something else. Because it's kind of fun to discover it for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, people tweet right from the event. So it'll be kind of hard to miss out on what was shared because there will be pictures and tweets and stuff like that. But typically it'll stream live on Twitch if they have live streaming available. So they'll announce that for sure.
Okay, cool.
Like I think it was just like just today or yesterday. I think it was today. Mark Rosewater announced the details of like the day and time the panel's going up. So I'm sure they're working out the streaming logistics if they're available now.
And to kind of bounce back to these, you know, highly limited release, in this case, these six planeswalkers in this very, I'm going to call it the Etch-a-Sketch art style. I know last year wasn't, they're incredibly few. Do we ever get an idea of how many of these sets actually released last year? Because it sounds like they'll be releasing more this year. Because on the actual official page, they said it'll be one per customer, but a higher number than last year.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't made, they haven't released any numbers, which kind of makes sense. Like, you know, it's not like a serial production, you know, where like they're only going to reproduce, you know, 500 copies and stamp each one or something like that. So, you know, I honestly don't have a sense of it, you know. Clearly it was in the, you know, it's in the hundreds. I know for a fact that some of last year's are still available or they held a reserve for use later because every Grand Prix every Grand Prix that I traveled to and worked in the past year has had one of these available as kind of as a special prize for side events. So, at a GP, you'll be able to play an event for like a uncut foil sheet. So like they save some of those sheets from like the printing process and use those for promotional and giveaway and event support at Grand Prix. And so I've seen, you know, I've seen the set everywhere I go. Not full out on display, but just as a side event. So, I'd be very curious to see how many will go up. Cause it said like last time, you know, they're going to put it up on the Hasbro toy website. So you can just order directly. But obviously if you're not camping out for it, it was really hard to get any last year. Like, you know, only a handful of people actually successfully got an order through, from what I could put together. So you know, if it goes up and it lasts for a couple of days and, like, you know, it's basically available more or less to anybody who wants to buy one at retail, that would be amazing. I'd be shocked. But it would, you know, obviously it would make me super happy. I'd love to make sure I can get one.
And from my side, I'm probably, of all the topics for today, I'm the most excited about Duels of the Planeswalkers. So Adam, we both were able, it came out on iPad, was it yesterday, Wednesday? Because usually Wednesday is a big game release day for iOS. Pretty much every game comes out on Wednesday, outside of a few little exceptions. And I guess next week, so this would be just a couple days after you potentially listen to this podcast, it'll be coming out on a lot of the other platforms like Steam and I think Xbox One, PS4, in some ways sort of everywhere.
Yeah, it's not on PlayStation Network this time. But
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is, it's very strange. You know, they didn't make a big deal about it. There hasn't been an official statement. I haven't been able to hear anything through, like, the grapevine or rumors or anything like that. So just very, very curious kind of like what happened there. Not sure if it was like a, you know, it might have been as simple as just like a developer side issue when they were developing for, you know, one of the platforms that didn't work out right and they couldn't push all the delays back or anything like that. But basically Steam, Xbox Live, arcades, so Xbox One and Xbox 360.
And I'm not sure how much you've gotten into it, Adam. Like it feels like the look of it is very similar to the 2014 version, but the way the game is structured and especially the in-app purchases, the monetization is very, very different than last year. And to me, somewhat confusing.
Well, why don't you describe it? I've had a chance to really dig in and play in the past day.
I'll use the word experience management. It doesn't mean good, but I've been around the cards for a long time. So I was kind of curious. I always like to start these games like, hey, I've maybe played Magic a little bit, or I've heard about the game. I don't know what it is, and sort of see how good a job they do introducing me to the game. So when you first log on, again, it has that kind of almost like these SDCC promos. It has a very black and white, high contrast art style, but the only way to put it, with some splashes of color to it. Overall, the user interface when you're actually in a match to me seems much better. It's much easier to tell what the different symbols mean. It's easy to tell what phase of the turn you're in. From that side, I think they've done a lot of improvements. But as confusing is once you go through their very basic tutorial about, you know, what are lands and spells, kind of how a turn is laid out, you're just sort of kind of dumped to the main screen where there's just like single player, multiplayer. Of course, they mention the store because this is a free to download app. So, of course, everything else is, you know, give me some sort of in-app purchase. And when you first start the game for free, you actually get a fair bit of content. It's almost like a personality test. Well, what they describe the different colors of Magic, and you have to pick the color that seems to describe you. Like, I like to destroy things through decay and hand disruption, so that's black. And once you pick your color, they give you a choice of about five or six, what amounts to like pre-constructed decks with little descriptions. You pick that, and that's sort of your deck that you start with. And as you play the game, at least, and if you played 2014, you in some ways you sort of have the enemy AI battles are broken up by planes, like Innistrad, Zendikar, yada, yada, yada. The first plane, Innistrad, is free. So that one you can play through for free, which I believe is four or five battles. And as far as I can tell, either after every battle or if you unlock certain achievements, you unlock boosters. So that is the big change in Duels of the Planeswalkers 2015. You can actually finally completely create a deck. So you have a card pool and you can make cards from that. The thing that to me is confusing is when you get a booster, it's so far it seems completely random how many cards and what rarity are in there. Because the first booster you get has literally one rare. And for me, I spent about 5 minutes trying to figure out where the rest of the cards from my pack went. So I realized there was only one card in that pack. And as I opened some further packs, they've been three cards and they were all commons. And you can see that they're largely tuned for the colors you're playing. And then you slowly accumulate cards with the other colors to hopefully make decks. So I ambled over to the store because I was kind of curious because I'm like, hey, you can make cards. We had heard that you could buy packs. I didn't know what that meant. So if you go to the store, and Adam, stop me at any time because I feel like I'm talking a lot. But if you go to the store, you have an option of, there's like a $29.99, so $30. It's the kind of unlock everything bundle. So the way they've broken this down is after you've gone through the first plane, first set of enemy battles, you would then have to pay for the future planes. And I thought they were $4.99, but I would have to double check that. And then also you can theoretically buy boosters and they're $1.99 a piece. It gives you a maximum to buy of 10. I don't know if that's, you can only buy 10 at a time or is that the max you can buy? And if you buy 10, you get all the cards in the game. That I don't know yet. Because for this $29.99 super bundle. You get all the planes, all the enemy battles. It unlocks multiplayer. Multiplayer is locked behind the kind of paywall, if you want to think of it that way. And it says you unlock the entire card pool. I don't know if that means you get one of every card or if you have four of every card. Some of the stuff seemed really vague. And I always get a little hesitant to throw it on $30 if I don't know exactly what I'm getting with this.
Yeah, I'll have to double check. So like historically, Duels of the Planeswalkers has had like the tutorial mode with kind of like a begin playing, and then like basically you unlock access to the rest of the game for like $10. It's really mm-hmm. cheap, relatively speaking. And then from there you unlock cards by just going through and completing all the challenges and stuff like that. So I think there might be a different mode that should be cheaper, because it sounds like the $30 one is basically you just go ahead and you buy everything right away. Like, yeah, you just have everything there is, and that's that. So it but seems like there should be another mode where you just unlock access to the game, because you should go through, you should continue to earn booster packs. The way the
telling you to play through all the planes, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah, you're supposed to play through all the planes, and then it's supposed to be replayable, kind of similar, a little bit similar to Chandelar. If anybody remembers that, where apparently you're going to be able to continue playing in a plane against, you keep tuning your custom deck, but you basically play against a like kind of like a randomized opponent AI, and their deck keeps getting better and better and better. And so like every time you beat them, like you earn another booster pack. So basically you should be able to grind your way to being able to build whatever you want within the app. That was my understanding from the developer article that went up on Daily MTG on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'd say, as far as I can tell, I'd say theoretically yes, but I guess now that it seems like the boosters may have various amounts of cards, I don't know how many boosters would I have to earn to theoretically unlock the whole card pool. Seems like that would be kind of just stuff as me as hopefully a conscious consumer would love to know. Like, do I get it from 10 boosters? If I buy the 10 boosters for $19.99, do I get all the cards? Or is it literally like Magic boosters where I just get a random collection and that's what I have?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be modeled off of Magic, like, you know, that if you buy a booster, there's going to be some number of each rarity guaranteed, but the individual cards will be, you know, randomized in some way. I'm wondering if you pre-order on Steam, you get a free premium booster, and so I think that's what maybe the what you buy in the store is like maybe right. versions of cards that look foil and they're basically like a digital version of a booster pack.
Good point. I think
which may be different from like when you're playing your custom deck in the game and kind of grinding on a plane to unlock cards from that plane. Cause each plane has a certain number of cards you can unlock. And I think that's visible in the deck building side. If I'm remembering from all the screenshots and everything that I've looked at but once you unlock all of the cards in a plane, like you don't need to play that plane anymore, but you may need to play different decks to unlock all the cards. Like it's just, you know, I don't know yet.
Yeah, and if they make it easy sort of kind of like to sort of do new game plus where you can go back and, you know, maybe start the game as one of these other pre-constructed decks, that would be pretty awesome. Especially if you're a newer player, it is nice to what it wants to do, try out a bunch of different pre-con decks to see what sort of style you like and just sort of learn what are kind of the core mechanics and combos and, you know, how to make a deck in Magic. I think that that'd be a really powerful tool for them.
And that is the one really, really interesting feature. I'm shocked it's in there actually. So apparently there's a feature, if you start building a deck, you can hit a button that's basically just like autocomplete. And,
they had that from Sealed Deck from 2014. You could say, make a deck for me from my sealed pool. And it would go through usually it was actually a surprisingly viable competitive deck out of your sealed pool. So I think this is just sort of the constructed version of that algorithm or agent, wherever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking from a heuristic standpoint, like looking at a sealed pool is often much, much more obvious than looking at like your entire card pool. So I guess if it sounds like it's seeding what you put in and then it's trying to finish what you were doing. So like if you put in a bunch of like mana generators and fatties, it's going to make sure you add your ramp spells and lands.
Mm-hmm. Which, like I said, I haven't gotten to play that much, but it could be, again, really slick for players going like, oh, okay, this would be a logical way to fill out this type of deck. Like say, hey, I want to play a big green fatty deck, which is going to be inherently some sort of a ramp deck. Help me get there. I mean, so far, I love these. I played on iPad, so like I said, it's going to be available all over. This is a great way to get in like 15, 20 minutes of Magic a night before you go to bed, which is currently where I'm at for my Magic playing. And so far, Garrick has not called me a noob, swore at me, or told me I'm like a Luxac or something, which has been something over Magic the Gathering Online for me so far. And because I am curious, this is something we'll probably revisit next week or the week after, is within about the next week, they are doing the, I want to call it the full beta conversion for Magic Online. So if you didn't like the new client, you are not going to have a choice here very, very shortly. And I'm curious to see how that goes. So the 17th, I can't remember off the top of my head, but.
Yeah, I think it's basically after the next downtime. It's either the 16th or 17th next week. So in preparation, a lot of the streamers have been switching over, obviously, to the new client. And like I saw Loading Ready Run using it tonight. Other people have been switching over to it. So it's been slightly mixed, but it seems like most haven't had the kind of like the cataclysmic issues switching over that, you know, people were predicting. Obviously, okay. It's totally varied by your individual machine and specs, and clearly it's not quite as highly optimized. When they took off support for Windows XP and things like that, they're definitely counting on you having a better machine. So the discussion is kind of how well it's going to be optimized down the road. But it seems like for right now, Magic is not dying completely online. But we'll see after the switch.
Yeah, but I feel bad for Ryan Spain and all those guys, because they've seemed like they've been trying to get out ahead of this, where right now they're doing a bunch of articles about the new client and, here's your new window to Magic the Gathering Online. And just reading through some of the replies of their tweets, you just feel bad, because they just must be getting gray from the Twitter vitriol that you get from any change that's even could be positive, and let alone one that a lot of people don't like. You just must go home and have a stiff drink after you go home if you're on the Magic the Gathering Online team right now.
Yeah, and it's really hard because there's obviously some truth in any statement. When somebody has a comment or an opinion, it's never like somebody's opinion about something is invalid. I mean, that's how they feel about it.
Yeah, you have an emotion about it. The facts it's based on may be completely wrong, but I can't argue that that's the way you feel.
It's just like I think people underestimate how taxing it's been, because they originally wanted to switch over last year. And they kind of put that off as they realized, clearly the development wasn't completely there. It was just a little too unstable. Not that version 3 was always necessarily the most stable client, as anyone who's been around long enough remembers. But the what I can't imagine has been taxing is to go from thinking that your split development team, because obviously it's still coding and resource investment to keep adding cards to two different clients now. They got to program all the operations in both to finally basically get away from that. And now you don't have the split, this development focus between keeping version 3 up to date and fixing bugs in there with all the new cards that you have to keep adding every set. And it's not like the cards are going to stop coming anytime. And then, to do the exact same thing in version 4 while continuing to prove the client itself is just...
that's a lot of work. You probably have nowhere near the manpower to do it.
Yeah, and without getting into argument whether they should or what they are or they aren't doing right, it's obviously, an extremely difficult process to keep up. It's like the way I look at it is for example, like Blizzard, they very famously has public test realm, PTR. Basically they make a copy of the game, but they update it with like a version of the next patch or the next content or the next expansion, whatever's coming out next. They have this development version. And most of the time that gets a dedicated team. Like there's a core team that's maintaining the current game and applying hotfixes and making changes like that. And then there's the team that manages the public test realm and is making the updates and things for that. And then there's a whole nother team beyond that that's building content that's not even being talked about yet or known or publicly available. And so it's this big sprawling enterprise behind the scenes just to have this, somewhat smooth, and it's still not always fully tested and vetted, and there's still a lot of hot fixes every patch, and people are pretty quick to forget that that even with all of that investment from multiple teams that are that are doing their jobs to the best of their ability at the top of the class in the industry, they still have a lot of hiccups along the way. It's a very big deal managing that. So that's probably the biggest thing that I'm excited about, is just seeing what happens now that they don't have that split. You know, they just have one client. That's my last hope. You know, I've been very, you know, I don't play a lot of Magic Online. I've been very, very patient and favorable with, you know, okay, let's get to a new client. Okay, bring out new features. Okay, you know, you're gonna make it different. But now that that's your baby and that's all there is there, you know, how quickly is this going to get ramped up?
Yeah, I mean, because I hadn't thought about the way it is exciting for the future of that product. You'll say version 4, now that they can't really focus all their attention on just that one. I hadn't thought of it that way. That, of course, they've been sort of having to kludge together and keep this kind of leaky ship that was the version 3 client going this entire time.
Yeah, so there's two things that I want that would make me play Magic Online every day. With the beta client, one would be bring back the ability to set the custom background, because I want to have my own background. You know, it's like basically my own version of a playmat. You know, a lot of the streamers in version 3 have, you know, some graphic or image or something on the screen for the background for where they're playing, and that's what I want. I want to be able to have my own playmat on Magic Online again. And then the other thing is leagues. You know, one of the things that I really miss about being able to go to a local store regularly is sometimes they'd have these sealed deck leagues. You know, I don't know if you've ever played that, Tom, where
you played sealed deck. Yeah, you played that quite a bit, actually, at Magic the Gathering Online, because that was kind of nice where it would give you reason to, like, play a handful of games a week, and there would be some progression, but you didn't have to be a super intense player to get that enjoyment.
Yep. And so it was in Magic Online way back in the day, and it seemed it was just... you know, obviously kind of a precursor to the severe server issues that they would run into over the years that followed. But it's a feature that they kind of removed because it was just so, it seemed to be creating a ton of instability. I think that's kind of the gist of how I understand it. It was just one of the big problems. So if they bring back leagues and they work, where I can play at my leisure throughout a whole week and rack up some points, and then next week open another booster pack and tweak my deck or build a whole different one or whatever and just keep playing, you know, that type of replayability is what's really interesting for me. And I don't want to necessarily build a commander deck and play against the broken commander decks all the time. You know, like, as much as I could open just a really bad sealed pool and be like, well, I guess I gotta join a different league this month. Having that ability just to sign on, play a couple games against people with relatively similar randomized decks and have a good time. Like, that's kind of one of the big draws that makes Hearthstone interesting. You know, the arena experience where you draft this deck and then you can just kind of come back and play it at your leisure. That's the kind of experience that I like to have with Magic. And League is pretty much as close as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of resonates with, especially if you're an old player, like, right, I used to love to play Arena where, you know, like he says, you know, local game stores, they had, like, you know, sort of seasons to it. I greatly enjoyed that. As you become, maybe, I don't know if you want to use the word, not an adult gamer, but start having families and full-time jobs and maybe have different hours, you start to look at different ways to get that same experience where you can't maybe spend all that time seeking it to go to a game store. But, boy, if I can hop online and play those games, like you said, with Hearthstone, that is really exciting that you can basically play limited at your own pace. Like, that's something for Magic you just really can't do yet. But if they could bring back sort of, like you said, a sealed league, that kind of scratches that same itch for me. And it's very accessible. I'd say that could be really exciting to a lot of casual players that maybe have gotten a little turned off to Magic Online for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years at this point. Because there's a lot of people who I think who are not grinders out there that would love Magic the Gathering Online. But right now, this is not a huge push for them to try it yet. Maybe this will be that impetus for them.
I think they certainly hope it is.
I agree with you, Adam, 100%. I would love to see those return. So I missed them when they went away. So for a while, I was confused. I'm like, where am I just not finding the right tab? But like, no, they're just gone. I'm like, well, that sucks. Now I have a lot of random commons that I have nothing to do with. Or let me play Iron Man Magic on Magic Online. Make it so I can actually literally destroy forever some of my cards. I think that would also be fun for streaming.
It's not quite Iron Man Magic, but they do have Phantom events where, like, you don't get to keep the cards. So it's kind of like Iron Man pull where, like, you do your thing and then, like, the cards are gone at the end.
Oh, I just need to be excited for stream. If I could have, like, true Iron Man where people know if they're watching my stream and I'm playing a, you know, it could be multiplayer, single player, like, hey, if I'm thinking I used to have an old Iron Man Magic. We used to play quite a bit of Iron Man Magic in real world. I don't know if you ever played real world Iron Man. It was incredibly fun format. Because it was kind of, it was popper. Primarily mostly comics because they were cheap. If you really wanted to gamble, you could put some rares in that were powerful. But if they got nuked, you're ripping them up. So it's your choice at that point. So usually it's a lot of common decks. And it depended on kind of your local house rules. But we play that, you didn't have a graveyard. If a card was destroyed, like say I cast a lightning bolt to kill my opponent's Urg Raiders, we're going old school, killing Urg Raiders with a lightning bolt. You had to tear up not only the Urg Raiders, but you tore up your lightning bolt. And I think that'd just be fun for people streaming. Like it would give a different dynamic to like what do you choose for play. Where hey, maybe in a normal Magic game would make completely logical that I would lightning bolt that, but if I know I'm gonna lose that card for the rest of the game, the rest of my life, that's more exciting to me. I doubt we'll ever get it, but I would love to see digital Iron Man Magic.
Yeah, I played a variant where at the end of a match, you kept track of all the cards that went to the graveyard, and those cards were what you destroyed. We also had a requirement you couldn't play more than one of a card in a deck. So that way, if the card was seen at any point and went to the graveyard, like you didn't know whether it was one version or the other. You didn't have the question of was it two. It was just that one card.
I see. Okay. It was fun, and this is something I want to try streaming list. It seems I'm trying. I people seem to like it. I'm trying to figure out why, and I want to try it, but I need to find a format. Besides Commander, I haven't found one that I can really do on a regular basis that would be exciting. Because I'm not going to be able to maintain a standard pool on Magic Online. I'm not going to be able to have a usable vintage pool on Magic Online. But Iron Man Magic, Popper, and Commander, those are things I can get into. Or League. League would be another fun one.
I'll be right there with you.
So, yeah. Because I think streaming sounds like a lot of fun. I still don't quite understand watching other people play a game that you can play yourself. But Twitch, being worth like $1 billion tells me that people seem to like it a lot. So it's worth trying. Adam?
I mean, how much money is involved with right now with watching other people play football?
Oh, and I'm not saying it's logical. It's just for me, it's I can go play football. It's not going to look anything like what I'm watching on TV. So I guess it's you have to be a person that can appreciate those nuances to say, oh, hey, this game that I'm watching or this limited draft that I'm watching, these people are really good. I probably can't do this. If you're not very good at the game, be like, oh, yeah, I can totally draft a great deck. I can kick a football over the mountains. You need to have that appreciation of the game to understand why these people are good at what they do. And I know, jack squat about pretty much everything I just mentioned. So, Adam, we're at the end of the show. We have some listener emails. We're dipping into the mailbag because I love emails. Where can people email us at? Or robots? Or any sort of, penis large man? Where can they email us at?
Well, if you want to email us about San Diego Comic-Con and whether you like or dislike the special exclusive, if you want to email us about Magic 2015 and how sweet or not sweet the set is, or you just want to email Tom and tell him how he should be streaming and playing Magic Online today, you can do that at mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com.
All right, well, let's dip it in. And do you want to have first crack at the mailbag? I feel like we're reaching into a bag of snakes. But
yeah, there's a ton. So, I mean, I don't want to necessarily go through all of these. But I guess probably the three things to hit are boning it up. Cause I see boning it up and kind of the Mobius tangent about snacks.
Oh yes. Okay.
Texas responses, which I'll address because it was me and it should be me. And then, more awesome MTG stuff. So
yes, as far as I can tell,
why don't I get the tough stuff out of the way? So we got two emails. And I got some tweets directly from some people about the offhanded remarks I made about Texas.
What do you remember? I couldn't remember what you'd actually said. I was trying to remember.
We were so far down the tangent that we're in complete joking land because we're talking about to bone up for something. Was it really a phrase? And so people had emailed in and said, yeah, it's a phrase. It's a piece of Americana. And so like. Somebody was like, I'm in Texas and we say it here. And another guy was like, I'm in Iowa and we say it here. And I was like, well, I don't believe Texas is representative of America. And basically made an offhanded comment about the very complex and I guess for lack of a better term, kind of politicized environment right now in Texas. and basically said Iowa, land of cornfield and planting, is. And that was meant as a broad joke, because nothing's really representative of America. No one state is a really good sample, because all the states are kind of different, thanks to all the local laws and jurisdictions and a variety of other reasons. But to the point, one guy emailed and was like, I'm not listening to the cast anymore. Adam's an ass. Another guy was like, Adam, you're an ass because Texas is
pretty good.
Which one?
I'm going to read the one that is titled "To Whom It May Concern," because I think I'm Dick Limit. I believe that's me. So it says, "Dearest Texas hater," I'm assuming that's Adam Dick Limit. I'm assuming that's me, an absent guy. That must be Conley. This was our two-man cast.
Yeah.
Pumped all with you with a heavy, heavy heart today. Have historically enjoyed your podcast, The Witless Banter. Witless, I just got that. And lack of focus genuinely lift my spirits and encourage me to continue on with my life. But the stridently anti-Texas tone taken by Mr. Staborski, you don't get called Mr. when you're in trouble, on this week's episode has left me feeling, well, what's the best way to describe it? Stabby. Yes, the current political climate of our state can be charitably described as retrograde. But to demean an entire state based on the fact that our duly elected politicos couldn't finish the easy Sudoku and the in-flight magazine seems overly harsh. So in general, he is sending us a joking, scathing email. I don't think he's actually mad. So, look at your beloved Minnesota. Your greatest contributions to modern political discourse are a smarmy wrestler and a washed-up comedian. So, of course, if you are not aware, I voted for Jesse Ventura. He was elected, actually, the governor against everybody's very expectations. And we also do have Al Franken is one of our senators. As a native Texan, it is my right and responsibility to stand up for this great state. And with that in mind, I'm required to present a less than comprehensive list outlining what makes Texas kick ass. So I greatly enjoyed barbecue brisket, breakfast tacos, chicken fried steak, Troy Rogers. I'm assuming that's Nolan Rogers.
Troy Roger, Nolan Hugh, and Dirk. Those are pitchers.
Oh, okay. I knew you.
Baseball.
Okay. Willie Nelson, Janis Joplin, Lyle Lovett, Buddy Holly, Six Flags. It says, if you don't know why this is a Texas thing, then you know less than every seventh grader in the state. Six Flags, I know, is an amusement park, but I'm not sure why that's I thought they were in places that aren't Texas. We have Valley Fair in Minnesota. I don't think it's a chain. That's our amusement park. The fact that El Paso is halfway between Dallas and Los Angeles, Austin, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Marfa, rodeos, cowboy hats, boots, howdy y'all, and Houston, we have a problem. Who else does NASA call when there's an issue? Arizona? Hell no, they call Texas. And says, excuse me while I compose myself. With that in mind, and with deeply Southern passive-aggressive hospitality fully engaged, let me invite you all down at any time to visit our lovely state. I'll be happy to show you that whatever you think about my home, you're probably wrong. And he drops the mic, Matt. So I thought that was the kind of emails I love to get.
Yeah.
Especially when they're at Adam's expense.
I mean, that kind of summarizes, that's why you can't take any broad in humor statement about even the most vaguest class of people, like Texans
or hobos.
Do I mean residents of Texas? Do I mean people who are generationally tied to Texas? Do I mean people that consider Texas like their true home, whether they're residents or not?
All of them.
When you take that stuff to heart, obviously it's gonna hurt. So, for the record, almost everything on that list I will agree with is awesome, and I love it. I'm a big fan of brisket and barbecue, and I do enjoy Texas-style barbecue. They do have some of the best brisket. I enjoyed it when I was down in Houston for the GP. I will agree. So I have nothing against Texas specifically. I just need to be mindful that I don't take anything specific about Texas broadly for jokes.
Don't be mindful. Then make the whole podcast.
I've
shoved my foot in my mouth so many times that just tastes like shoe leather. So we also have, we'll just take turns. I will do, this is our earliest one in the mailbag, or the oldest. This is from Kai. It just says the best snack. Did we read this one about the tubs of Nutella? And it just says best snack, those tiny little tubs of Nutella with the foil peel off lid that come with a little plastic spatula thing to eat. Amazing.
Basically just a little eat your own Nutella cup. That is one of the greatest snacks. My wife will agree.
Okay, I knew what Nutella was. I didn't realize it came like little travel packs that I could covertly, get my chocolate fix while I'm in like business like situations with my spatula. I think Conley,
I think we read it before because the next one is saying grew up in Texas and talked about blowing it up.
All right. Yeah. Well, do we do Dinesh? Yes. We didn't read this one, did we? The Dark Times. usually delete them if we read them. Oh, no, we did. Never mind. It's been a little while. So we'll go up and we talked about. Oh, here,
I'm going to read this one because let's have a high note. Let's inject some upward motion here. Great cast, !! There's two, so you know it's really, really important. Tom Conley and Adam, thank you for MTG Potpourri. The show makes me laugh is one of the finest hours of entertainment that I indulge in every week. Each and every episode is extra awesomely special.
Yes,
I'm so glad to have Tom back in the air. My two cents, boning it up is a phrase I'm familiar with as it pertains to studying hard, so add Pennsylvania to that list. Regards, Farron.
Yeah, I think you and Kyle are the only ones that have not heard of this term. So I have like 300 million
people. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I had heard of boning it up. The problem is because I've traveled all across the country for events and talked to people everywhere, it's really hard for me to remember, did I hear boning it up when I was in Pennsylvania before I went everywhere and met people? Did I hear boning it up in D.C., which can mean it could come from anywhere, literally. Did I hear boning it up when I visited you? It's one of the things where, I just don't remember. That's not something that I remember and personally retain. So I wasn't willing to speak up for the state of Pennsylvania, but Farron was. So yeah, Pennsylvania, welcome to the club. You are now boning it up.
I'm totally right, because we do have a new email from Kai. It just says question with a question mark. Question? Missing Conley this week, so this is reverse the last episode, makes me wonder, what does Tom have on him that makes him come on the show in the first place? I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't think I have anything, actually, on Conley. I think he just enjoys the verbal abuse. Imagine a spoiler season, no spoilers, nothing. Impossible to do, but imagine rocking up to a pre-release and seeing everything for the first time. He's talking Time Warp to 10 years ago. So I agree. I think that would be fun. It's not going to happen, but it would be fantastic.
That's how they used to be, Tom. You know that, right?
I mean, so you'd still got stuff I thought an Inquest and those things, you'd still get some sort of preview of at least a couple of the cards.
It was before even that.
Oh, because I wasn't going to pre-release. I don't think I honestly knew they existed. I was just buying packs at a store.
It's because it was so crazy. The pre-releases were literally one event. So imagine a Grand Prix. That was the pre-release.
Oh, so you had to travel somewhere to do this?
Yep, it'd be one in Columbus, one in New York, and they only ran one pre-release, and there weren't previews. There was no Magic the Gathering website, so to say. This was before MagicTheGathering.com as we know it, which is a big learn about Magic marketing side with a bunch of daily content, with a bunch of competitive content, with a bunch of historical stuff. It was all just you literally showed up and you'd see these cards for the first time. It was just not something that was known.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm sorry. That's exciting. So a tidbit for Tom, I was in a local McDonald's the other day and noticed that they sell ice cream in a waffle cone now. They also put toppings on it. They have chocolate, I'm going to say caramel or caramel. Again, you can argue which state you're from. Strawberry and blueberry. So I can now walk into a McDonald's and ask for a blue waffle cone. Don't Google that. Adam, did you listen when I used to do the Don't Google This segment and talk about blue waffles?
Why do you think I was vehemently trying to avoid knowing what you were Google image searching at the beginning of the episode?
Okay, so you searched for blue waffles, didn't you?
I have been there. I have unfortunately done that.
That is the sexually transmitted infection that cannot be unseen.
All right, so it looks like maybe this is the last email that's kind of new to cover. This is from Bodie. It looks
Sorry, Bodie. Point Break ruined your name forever. Yes, Bodie, you can never be taken seriously after Point Break.
So this is kind of Magic swag. My name is Bodie, and these are my playmats that I have hand drawn with only a Sharpie. So this is white playmat with a black Sharpie. The two picks are the Walking Dead comic, Nick Grimes shooting a zombie girl, and of Rorschach from the comic Watchmen.
The Rorschach. I don't know Walking Dead, but the Rorschach one is cool.
Yeah, the Walking Dead. I'm not as familiar with comic artists, but the Walking Dead has a very iconic style from an artist that's done a ton of work for them. Really, really knocks it out of the park. Really, really helps set the theme. I'm a huge Rorschach fan, and the Rorschach playmat looks really sweet too.
And you have to think, that's ballsy drawings. I mean, you don't get to erase anything. One mistake, yeah. And you're kind of out.
Yeah, well, I mean, the nice thing about working with a Sharpie, because I've seen it with some of the artists and other people that do it, is you can use a graphite pencil, and you can very, very lightly kind of draw on the white playmat, and it kind of gives you a little bit of wiggle room to kind of clean up and manage it. So I don't know what Bodhi's process is.
For comic books, like you have somebody sort of sketch it out, and then you would sort of color it in.
Yeah, or like you kind of look at it and you kind of draw it on the playmat yourself and kind of use a kind of similar to like artists doing still life. Like you use what's there as a frame of reference to draw it on draw it for yourself. So I don't know what Bodhi's process is, but it's way better than what I could do. Definitely some time and talent involved here. So kudos to you. I love custom playmats. They look really sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, so obviously this is something from a number of podcasts, but we do love seeing pictures of your magic swag. I just want emails, mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com, because it makes my day.
And so we all want to make Tom's day.
You do, because if Tom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Just wait till the Google images you'd get from that one. So, Adam, we actually stayed somewhat on topic today. Are you impressed? I'm dying to talk about a B-movie, if I can end with a B-movie.
Well, if we can cast next week when it's kind of like a down week and we don't have all this news piled up, you know, I think we can slip in some time for B-roll.
Okay. I'm just going to mention the name of the movie so people can look it up and we'll talk about it next time. And if it's also slow, we had some tweets saying people wanted to hear the snake story. And Adam, if you didn't hear it on Monday Night Magic, this one might make you vomit. So just for your warrant.
We'll have to do the snake story.
Yeah,
if snakes, it's not penises, next week, the first slow news week where we're like, did anything really happen this week? No, snake story. That's how it's going to go down.
But go search for, it's a movie filmed in an 80s schlock style, but made in 2014 called Wolf Cop, which is a werewolf detective or a werewolf police officer. It looks amazing. So go research that. I'm still trying to hunt down a way to see this movie legally or illegally. I don't even care. I just want to be able to see this movie. It's currently on limited release in Canada, if I understand correctly. But I think it's getting enough press now. I mean, people are talking about it, mentioning on Twitter and emails. I think it's going to finally get enough buzz to hopefully get some sort of, even like a video on demand release here. So Wolf Cop, check it out. So if you want to tell me maybe about where I could actually watch or see Wolf Cop or any other stuff we talked about today, you can email me again, mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com, or Twitter, we are at mtgpopery, or I am at PSGReader. And Adam, for you?
I'm Adam Staborski, the_Stibs on Twitter. That's STYBS. You can also find me on GatheringMagic.com as well as the official Gathering Magic website, DailyMTG.com, doing the Thursday column Command Tower. And Conley had to leave for some of his teamwork going into the Pro Tour in a few weeks. But if you want to reach out to Conley and give him encouragement or troll him with a very linear brew, that's going to be Conley81, CONLEY81 on Twitter.
Perfect. Yeah. He's dead to me, but yeah, you guys can contact him. So thank you again. Join us next week. I think we're kind of back onto a more normal schedule again, especially once this sort of Pro Tour season is over, it'll be much easier because Conley and you, Adam, obviously been traveling all over the place. It'll be easier once that is up. You're not gone like literally every other weekend.
Well, I am. So I guess I'll do a quick plug. So if you go to conventions or Grand Prix, I know Conley obviously goes to a lot of the Grand Prix and Pro Tour. So I'll be at Grand Prix Boston in 2 weeks. I'll be at the Pro Tour with Conley. I'll be working the text coverage team at the Pro Tour in Portland the week after that. I'll be at Gen Con. So that's mid-August now. And then I may be going to PAX Prime. I haven't confirmed that one way or another, but that's a Labor Day weekend, 2 weeks after Gen Con. And then I'll be at Grand Prix Salt Lake City, which is coming up, I believe, early September. I got to remember those dates. At some point, I got to book a flight for that. And I'll also be at Grand Prix Nashville, which is not till much later in the year, fortunately. But yeah, for the next couple weeks, every other week, I will be running around the United States somewhere, I think.
Wow. Okay.
So if you want to track me down and yell at me in person about me joking about Texas.
Yeah. Come up with your huge belt buckle, your big cowboy boots, and your Big Ten 20-gallon hat, and challenge him to a duel. Because I think that happens a lot in Texas, where you slap people with a glove, and that's a duel, and you fight to the death right then.
I'm pretty sure that does not happen, Texas. That sounds awful. Oh,
all the time. Well, I guess there wouldn't, you wouldn't be fighting because everybody has a gun, so you'd probably just shoot them.
That also sounds really awful.
In the kneecap.
I don't think that's what happens in Texas either.
Yeah, maybe just shoot them in the toe. So maybe everybody in Texas has like three toes. Because if you lose your big toe, you're considered disabled. You get disability.
I'm trying to be reasonable, and you're just like, what can I say that's the most unreasonable thing to say about Texas?
Yeah,
like,
I'm not sure why.
I joked about Texas once, and you're like, it's like, are, like, do you just hate Texans, Tom? Like, are you the actual Texas hater?
No, no.
I'm like, just am I going to have the rep if you're going to be like secretly in the closet with this? Because that's what's going to be happening right now.
Austin or Houston or something. It's going to be bloodshed. I'm going to have to come in. Do you know Reckless Kelly, the Australian hero that dressed up like in the garbage can, like armor metal suit that he made? You have to wear that thing. So look it up. But Yahoo Serious, they actually made a movie about it called Reckless Kelly. It's a very interesting story to read about.
I hope not. I hope I do not have to wear a trash can suit of trash can armor.
As opposed to my normal GP trash can suit that I wear. Do I have to make a new one, Tom? I'm not made of trash cans.
I think this tangent is taking us straight into a black hole. So I think that's the end of it.
All right. Well, thank you
for joining us. Thank you for listening this week.
All right. Talk to you guys later, and talk to you later, Adam.